We're going inside them. We're going outside them. Inside them, outside them. And when they get them on a run once, we're going to keep them on a run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get them on a run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today, we're going to win.
It's a fake. The throw to Domingue. He bobbles it, and then it hits to the end zone. Touchdown.
Let's just go. He's got three people down there. The ball's up in the air. Caught. Touchdown. 4th and 5. The national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner.
Welcome, fun lovers. We are live on the Gups Corner Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Bobby Berger, former Notre Dame football player and now college football aficionado. And as always, the goal is to be the premier college football podcast. If you're wondering how I'm doing, three kids, it is zone defense all the way. And let me tell you, there was a hole in the zone defense this morning. So here I am making breakfast, and I hear little Junior scampering away in the other room. Don't think much of it. Well, we eat breakfast, we clean up, all good, right? Well, after breakfast, I go to the bathroom. Whoa, Nelly. Junior took the entire roll of toilet paper, unraveled it, and packed the toilet. I mean, this toilet looked like Toomer's Corner in Auburn when they upset Alabama. Was everywhere. So like Junior this week, hopefully our wide receivers can find some holes in the zone defense. Without further ado, let's get into our trivia question. All right, guys. 4 NFL players had a great week one. I want you to tell me where they went to college. I'm going to do a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver, and a tight end. And yes, they will get progressively harder. So 4 guys that had a good week are Pat Mahomes, Melvin Gordon, Deebo Samuel, and Darren Waller. I need you to tell me where those 4 guys went to college. Pat Mahomes, Melvin Gordon, Deebo Samuel, Darren Waller. And while you think about it, let's play our theme music. All right, now that you got your thinking caps on, let's reveal the answer here. We got 4 guys. Where did they go to college? Pat Mahomes went to Texas Tech. Easy one, layup. Melvin Gordon, another semi-easy one, Wisconsin. He was a Badger, phenomenal up there, especially in that system. Next one, Deebo Samuel, getting slightly tougher, South Carolina. And he was a guy we were playing in DFS only a few seasons ago. And then the tough one here is my guy Darren Waller. And if you had him in your fantasy game last week, you probably won. Well, it turns out Darren Waller went to Georgia Tech. And actually, I didn't know that one. I had to look that one up myself. You know, I think it's just fun every once in a while to see where these guys went to college, the guys that do well in the pros. And the best part about playing college football and fantasy DFS, you know exactly who these guys are. And then you see them in the NFL, you know who everyone is. And it's a lot of fun seeing guys develop or get better. I mean, look at Terry McLaurin tonight. And who would have known he's going to be the guy he is today. And he caught a touchdown pass as I'm recording Thursday night. I know you guys are listening here on Friday. All right, let's hop into it. Our slate breakdown.
Wrong side.
Left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
Strong side.
Left side.
All right, fun lovers. Let's do a little cherry on top this week. We're going to start with that big game of the week, Auburn at Penn State. Not on the DFS slate, but Penn State's favored by 5. And let me tell you about this game. This is a trajectory-changing win for the program who wins. The program who wins, if Penn State wins, I guarantee you that night or early Sunday morning, every coach is going to be in the coaching office texting every one of the recruits saying, hey, I'm telling you, this program's coming the right direction. We just beat Auburn. They just won the national championship in the last 10 years. You know, they beat Bama a few years ago. This is a program-changing win. And it's pretty similar to Auburn, too. You go on the road, you know, Happy Valley, there's going to be a lot of eyes on the program, eyes on this game. You got the whiteout game. This is a program-changing win. And to give you an example, when Notre Dame beat Clemson last year, that was a program-changing win. Now you look at Notre Dame's recruiting class for the next cycle, and it definitely benefited from Notre Dame winning that game in primetime, a lot of eyes on them. As far as this matchup, two good coaches in this one. I'm really curious to see how Brian Harsin's going to fit in at Auburn. It's just a little bit, you know, it's kind of clash of personalities there, but he's a good coach. He's a grinder. And then Penn State is a new offensive coordinator this year. I would lean Penn State, but I'm going to stay away and just watch this one for fun. That's Penn State minus five. All right, let's get into the DFS slate here. We're just talking about Coastal Carolina at Buffalo. Coastal is a minus 14 point favorite. I tell you what, I will watch Coastal Carolina. I don't care who they play. They play Kansas last week. They run one of the most creative offenses in all of college football. It's absolutely amazing. The motions they do pre-snap, every play, whether it's a run or the pass, has literally three players that could get the ball based on how the defense reacts. Or at least you think that if you're a defense. There's so many fakes, you know, checkdowns. I mean, it's just a fun offense to watch. Buffalo, jury's still out. New coach. Buffalo beat Wagner but lost to Nebraska, which I'm not sure how good Nebraska is. I'm taking Coastal Carolina minus 14 in this one. They are just a much better program right now in Buffalo without a head coach. I think they're losing a step there, and the MAC is certainly a step down from the conference Coastal Carolina plays in. As far as players in this game, Coastal Carolina, it's almost like you're playing against the option. It's kind of like, what does the defense take away? You know, last week, the defense, Kansas, didn't take away the outside pitch. Reese White went nuts. Some days you're going to have, hey, maybe Buffalo decides to take away the run. Okay. Hiley on the outside is going to have a big game. So it's really hard to predict what Coastal guy does well, because it's almost like an option attack, but no one really runs what Coastal Carolina does right now. So it's really hard to pick out who's going to do well. But as it stands, I think Grayson McCowell is an interesting kind of off the board play, because he does have upside to rush in like three touchdowns and throw three TDs. If Buffalo decides to defend like that. And one thing you like about Coastal is they kept all the starters in the game last week when they were blowing out Kansas. So give me coat. And because of that too, I'm also taking Coastal minus 14, lock it in. That's my first pick. Buffalo, I don't know. The jury's still out here. They lost Patterson. You're seeing how good he was, how good he is in the NFL. I don't think running backs matter a ton. They matter a little bit more in college than they do in the pros. The backup there is going to get a lot of carries, but this is Coastal. So maybe Kevin Marks. Well, he's backup last year. Now he's a starter. So Kevin Marks is interesting. Giovanni Ruiz is a wide receiver for Buffalo. He's hurt. So maybe a guy like Dominic Johnson. Quian Williams is their main guy at wide receiver. And no one Kyle Van Trees for me. But I'll be a little later on the Buffalo side. Because, again, I'm predicting a blowout of Coastal Carolina minus 14. Next game, this is a good one, guys. Michigan State at Miami. Miami is favored by 6 points. I love out-of-conference games. You know, last year, it was just the in-conference play, of course. And you had a pretty good idea of where these teams were, but you had no idea how these teams matched up from one conference to the next. And we're starting to see a little bit of that, because we've had some interconference matchups here, or out-of-conference matchups. But this is a game, you know, ACC, Big Ten, what do we got here? Because we really don't know how good Michigan State is. What if Northwestern sucks? Maybe Michigan State's not any good either. They weren't any good last year. Miami, Florida plays Alabama, and they get blown out. Everyone gets blown out by Alabama. Notre Dame, Ohio State, they played out, or, you know, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Clemson, where I can't even remember who played the national championship, but everyone gets blown out by Alabama. All right, that's going to happen. App State's a good team. Miami, Florida is probably not that bad. I know they're favored by 6. I would lean Miami, Florida, but I'm going to stay away for this one. Now, as far as DFS, Michigan State running back Kenneth Walker, former Wake Forest transfer, you can definitely play Kenneth Walker if you like Michigan State in this game. Jaden Reed's their stud receiver. Sure, fine, play him up. And then the Cane side, De'Aaron King, of course, he's always in play. I feel like, you know, people kind of forget how good he is just because he's been there for so long. People like the shiny new toy in DFS. So maybe some De'Aaron King. Cameron Harris is going to get a lot of workload at running back. He's pretty cheap. Wide receiver is a complete mess for Miami. And remember, when you have a running quarterback like De'Aaron King, you do not have to play a wide receiver with him because that quarterback's going to score. If that quarterback, De'Aaron King, runs two touchdowns in all by himself, he's going to hit value, you know, no matter what wide receivers do. So you don't always have to play wide receivers with rushing quarterbacks. And we have a lot of those guys on this slate. And again, I said Miami minus six would be my preference, but I'm going to stay away from this one. All right, guys, let's get into the big horse of the week. Big horse of the week are the Georgia Bulldogs. I tried to get a little out of the box here. There's a lot of people each week who could win the big horse of the week, but UAB is not a bad team. All right. They handedly crushed Jacksonville State, who, yeah, it took a miracle, but they did beat Florida State. Yikes, Notre Dame. But UAB is a good, solid team, and they just throttled them. I mean, throttled them. Defensively, completely shut them down. Offensively, the run game was fine, and the offense hit big plays in the passing game. They're the big horse because you saw their upside this past week. That is a team that can compete with Alabama. Obviously, they proved it against Clemson. But if they play on offense like they did against UAB, who's a good, solid defensive team, they have a lot of upside. So, Georgia Bulldogs, congratulations. You're the big horse of the week. Let's get back in the games. You got Virginia Tech at West Virginia. West Virginia is a 2.5-point favorite. Is Virginia Tech that good? I don't know. I don't really think they're that good, to be honest with you. That should also tell you my thoughts on North Carolina. Now, Virginia Tech did lose their tight end, James Mitchell. That is a tough loss, no doubt about it. He is a good player for them. Man, DFS-wise, there's not a lot of like here for Virginia Tech. They rotate a lot of running back. They don't throw the ball a ton to wide receivers. Sort of feels like a pass. West Virginia, same thing. I mean, they spread the ball around. They got four wide receivers they throw out there. And they run this dink and dunk offense that, you know, a lot of people think this is true with Mike Leach's team too. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, it's Mike Leach. The guy's going to throw the ball a lot. Like, this is going to be a high scoring game. Well, here's the reality. If they're completing a bunch of 3-yard passes, that's really shortening the game. The way that creates the up-tempo games, the way that's created is you have teams like, think of like Tennessee this year with their new coach, Josh Heupel, or think of Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin. These guys are snapping it one play after the next. Those are the games that create like the big high tempo, like 50-50 shootouts. You could throw it a lot, but if you throw it a lot and you're not pushing the ball downfield, it doesn't mean that game's going to shoot out. And you find a lot, and there's no better case in point there than with West Virginia. The only guy to target is obviously Letty Brown. He gets a ton of carries. He sees targets. Again, they love to dump the ball down. So he'd be my only target there in DFS. As far as the game, West Virginia minus 2.5. West Virginia kind of disappointed me against Maryland. I'm not really high in Maryland this year. And, you know, I thought they would really have a better showing. So I'm going to stay away from this game. Again, we've got to be picky. All right, next one. This is a fun one. Cincinnati at Indiana. UC is a 3.5-point favorite. Massive one for the UC program. And I'll tell you what, when there is a group of five team playing any Power Five program, I don't care who it is, that group of five team circles the date. I think you saw it earlier this year. East Carolina was hosting Duke. I mean, the stands were full. They were hosting a Power Five opponent. Was it Duke? It doesn't matter. Hey, it's a Power Five opponent. These guys, they walk around. They think they're better than us. We get screwed in the rankings to these big five teams all the time. This is what these group of five teams think. And they are circling. Cincinnati is circling this date for Indiana. I expect them to be ready to go. And I'm not sure how good Indiana is anyways. So give me UC minus 3.5. Desmond Ridder, DFS, obviously playing at will. One note there, if UC's winning big, I think they're going to call plays to get Desmond Ridder some stats because nothing helps the program recruit more than when one of your guys is up on the podium for the Heisman Trophy. And Desmond Ridder is getting a little buzz out there. So that's a guy I like to maybe sneak a couple touchdowns late if UC blows them out. I'm not saying they will. I hope so, because I'm taking UC minus 3.5 as an official pick. But just a thought there. Their running back, Jerome Ford, Alabama transfer. He is a really good player. Like every running back Alabama gets, he's a good player. An unknown name here, wide receiver Tyler Scott. He's done pretty well this year. And then they have the the old staples, Alex Pierce, Josh Wiles, the tight end. Should go a couple different directions. As always, you do not have to play those guys with Ridder. Indiana. Now, UC has some excellent corners. They have one guy, Gardner, who is legit a first-round pick. He is a lockdown guy. But Indiana will move a guy like Freifogel into the slot to avoid some of that, avoid that matchup. And I actually think Freifogel could have a decent game here. So he's a guy that's likely going to go way under the radar, but he is a guy that could has, you know, 10 for 180 and two upside with the best of them in college football. So give me some Ty Freifogel this week. The rest of the team, you just take your big Sharpie marker, Indiana Hoosiers, and give it a big red X. All right, guys, the big dummy of the week. You could probably guess who this is going to be. Let's give it 5 seconds to play our theme song.
A lot of miscommunication there, and that one doesn't feel good, and it's embarrassing.
Kerry Coombs, congratulations. You have won the big dummy of the week. If you guys don't know who Kerry Coombs is the Ohio State defensive coordinator. He cemented this award when Oregon literally ran the same exact run left three times to score in the red zone. Literally three times. And the running back walked into the end zone every single time. Ohio State starts 4 or 5 stars across the defensive line. No pressure. And these guys, you know, you talk about alignments. The linebackers are all lined up wrong. I've never seen a more stable defensive group in my life, meaning like before the ball is snapped, these guys don't move. They literally just stand there. They don't move. And nothing makes it easier, especially for a team like Oregon who says, hike, and then looks at the sideline to see if they can adjust for a play. Usually just stands there, you know, or Ohio State stands there. You know exactly what play they're running on every single snap. Now, let me say this. There's a difference in college football being a great recruiter versus a coach. The great coordinators, you really have to be a great chess player. You're really playing chess. Not only does your move matter, but the opponent's move matters. And how are you going to counter your opponent's move to your place? That's basically what chess is. So you're really playing chess on grass with football players. The best offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators are incredibly smart people. Now let's talk about recruiting. Recruiting has nothing to do about chess. It's about connections. It's about winning over the families. It's about, you know, instilling a player like, hey, you can be the best that you can be at our university. And you have the best chance of making the NFL at our university. And Kerry Coombs is probably Ohio State's best recruiter. And it's got to the point where he's such a good recruiter. The only way Ohio State was going to keep him is if they promoted him to defensive coordinator. So it's kind of a catch 22 here, right? You have a great defensive coordinator. You have a great recruiter. You need to keep him. So you made him defensive coordinator. Well, now they're paying for it a little bit because, you know, Kerry Coombs wins the big dummy of the week. In a perfect world, your recruiters are your best recruiters and they have to be coaches to make money are somewhat inconsequential positions, or at least there's an analyst underneath them that is one of those chess player type of guys that can really help them out. Because very, very rarely is there a guy who's a phenomenal chess player and also a phenomenal schmoozer, you know, to put it lightly. All right, back to the games here. Minnesota at Colorado. Colorado minus 2.5. Man, they almost got the job done last week against Texas A&M. I doubted you, Colorado. I did. I was on Texas A&M minus 17.5. Hey, listen, the quarterback being hurt did not hurt, but Colorado, hats off to you. You played your asses off. You probably should have, could have won that game. Let it kind of slip away there, but hats off. You played well. You kind of you surprised me a little bit. Now you get Minnesota, row the boat, coming to Colorado. I don't have a lean on this game. I don't love Minnesota. Colorado, I didn't like them, but then they were good last week, so I'm really just not sure what to think. It's a complete pass. Let's talk about the math of some carries here. Potts here is the running back now that Ibrahim's hurt for Minnesota. He got 34 carries last week. 34 freaking carries. Most of the guys in college football are getting 15 to 20 carries. So if you're just a man, you guys obviously know this, but if you average 3 yards a carry, which is terrible in college football, 20 carries, you get 60 yards. You know, you get 34 carries, you're looking at 110 yards, just at 3 yards a carry. Now, if you go to 5 yards a carry, next thing you know, you're at 100, almost 170 yards. So you cannot ignore that workload from Trey Potts, 34 carries. And Minnesota has a good offensive line, and Colorado could be a little down. I'm interested in Potts. Colorado, if Jarek Broussard is the running back, if he's hurt, and he did leave the game last week, Alex Fontenot is an interesting play. They can't throw the ball. It's a real problem for Colorado. And 2021, if you can't throw the ball a little bit, or at least make them pay when you do throw, like someone like Army does, you're going to have a hard time winning a lot of games. And so I have no interest in the passing game there. All right, Florida State at Wake Forest. Wake Forest is a 4.5-point favorite. Yikes. Not good for Florida State here. But I'll tell you this. The guy who got beat in the secondary for Florida State was talking with the media the other day. Hey, hats off to them. He took ownership for it, said it was a bad play. You know, hats off to him. He didn't have to do that. That's accountability right there. Milton is starting this game. Hats off to him. Comes back from an absurd injury, scary injury. You're just happy to see that guy out in the field. Wake Forest hadn't really played anyone this year, right? They have not played anyone. They had a couple cupcake games. Coach does that this every single year. I think they're going to be ready for this one. Give me Wake Forest minus 4.5. I think they're better than people think. And this is the Florida State team who's last week. And now we're questioning how good Notre Dame is. Florida State's looking a lot like they did last year, a team that I believe, don't quote me, I believe they went 2-4 in the ACC. I think Wake Forest can catch them in a good spot here, coming off a tough loss. I think everyone's just kind of scratching their heads down there in Tallahassee. They need more recruits to come in. They need more recruits to come in now. They got some problems. Wake Forest side, they got some wide receiver rotation, big-time wide receiver rotation. I don't love wide receiver rotation if you're an offense, because I think you lose a lot of chemistry with the quarterback, especially in an era where you have, you know, downfield passing throws and, back shoulder throws or throws where guys have to sit down in the zone. I think you lose a little bit of that when you rotate a lot. And if you look at the best teams, you know, you look at Alabama, Ohio State, even Clemson a little bit, and Oklahoma, they rotate a lot too. But the best teams, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson lately, they've all keep their three wide receivers on the field for the most part. And I just wonder if it's to build chemistry like that. Now, one guy who will not rotate is Jaquari Roberson for Wake Forest. This guy's an absolute stud. And when you're looking at target shares, he's a 27% target share, meaning he's getting 27% of the targets on any Sam Hartman pass. He's only played, you know, like half of either game. So if Roberson has played the entire game, you know, the targets are also counting when the backups are in. He could be reaching 35-40% target share. Of course, we'd like a guy like Roberson this week. Wake Forest, they always split carries in the backfield, so not as interesting. But if Wake Forest blows Florida State out, maybe. And then Florida State's hopeful they can get Ontario Wilson back this week. They just struggled finding receivers this year. They rotate a lot. They just don't have a guy. They rotate running backs. They sound like a big red X. All right, here. Let's get into the doctor's picks. And, man, the doctor's on fire. And he has a massive, I mean, massive slate for us to pick from here today. I'm going to have to write all this down. Let's play our theme music. All right, finally, we have the doctor's picks. Doctor is 2-1 last week. He is 8-1 on the year. a scintillating start. He might have got greedy this week. He has 11 picks. 11. I'm going to go through these fast. UCF minus 6.5. West Virginia minus 2.5. Boston College minus 14.5. Miami minus 6.5. 6. UC minus 3. Colorado minus 2.5. Florida State plus 4.5. Doctor and I are different on that one. That's very interesting. He also likes the Florida State money line, but we won't count that as a pick. SMU minus 12.5. Mississippi State minus 3. Utah minus 9. Tulane plus 14.5. Altogether, that is 11 picks. So the doctor could have got a little ahead of himself here. So we'll see. This could make or break his year, taking 11 picks. A little bit risky there, bud. All right, let's get back into place here. Purdue at Notre Dame. Notre Dame has an offensive line problem. I mean, it's a big, big, big glaring problem. You know, for years they had recruited offensive line really well. They had sent a lot of guys to the pros, some studs. They have a couple guys that are going to play in the pros right now. Their center is really good. Their left tackle is really good. He's a freshman. The problem is he's hurt. He's out. They got some other injuries in the offensive line, and they lost, you know, four guys to the NFL last year, where most teams in college football return basically four or five starters everywhere in the offensive defensive line. Notre Dame lost four offensive line starters, and it is really, really hurting them. I think also what you're seeing is when you have a quarterback who's not mobile and Jack Cohn, that's he's somewhat mobile. That's one extra gap the defense has to account for, and they had to do that with Ian Book. He's quick. So you see Tyler Buchner come in, the backup quarterback from Notre Dame. Next thing you know, the running game looks a little better because you've got to respect the quarterback run. But Notre Dame has a big offensive line problem, so I'm staying away from this game. Purdue, the David Bell show. I mean, this guy's really freaking good. I'm really curious how he's going to project in the league. You know, usually in this system, the wide receivers look really good in college. I'm just kind of curious how they're going to look in the pros. David Bell will be the play for Purdue. Notre Dame, you know, we talked about the quarterback. They're rotating. I'm out. Michael Mayer, I don't think there's much of a debate. He's one of the better tight ends in college football, if not the best. He gets targets left and right. Kevin Austin, he's going to see volume. Although I think Austin could win a little bit more than he does. And then there's always Kyron Williams, who for some reason, Notre Dame, and maybe because it's his stature, and Kansas State kind of does this with Deuce Vaughn too. They almost like limit these guys to 15 or 20 carries. And I get it. I mean, it's a long season. You want these guys to be there all season. They're not that big a stature. You want to give other guys reps. So it seems like Kyron Williams' ceiling is 15 to 20 touches. Now, the thing is, and this is true with Deuce Vaughn too, they're really, really good. So in those 15 to 20 touches, I mean, they could definitely hit value. But it's hard to bank on that every single week. So it's really tough on any given week whether they're going to play Kyron Williams or not. I'd probably lean to the fade side for the workload. But you have a guy like Kyron who can also catch passes, and it's just tough. I said – under Lions Notre Dame minus 7. I am staying away from this one until I see offensive line improvement. All right, good. One rival to another, Notre Dame. Now we're going to USC. USC at Washington State. USC's minus 8. I don't know what to expect in this game. And you will rarely see me pick a team that's coming off firing their coach. Because I can tell you when you know, I was with Notre Dame and you know when Coach Weiss left and – I've talked to other buddies that with their schools or coaches left, sometimes it's a freaking free for all. Like these guys all of a sudden have no responsibility. There's an interim head coach, but every coach in that office is spending more time updating their resumes, calling their contacts, trying to find a new job because they don't have a job at the end of the year. I mean, think about it. If you're in the business world and you know your company's getting bought out, you're not going to have a job in 6 months. Safe to say you're going to spend a lot of time looking for your next job. And that's exactly what happens in college football. It is no different. So I don't know which way this can go because the flip side of this is everybody hated Clay Helton and they're like, the hell with him. You know, I'm so glad he's gone. I'm going to play my ass off. because I hated that guy, and I'm going to prove that he was the reason we sucked. So it literally could go either way. So if I see the game go one way or the other, another here, maybe that's a game I'll look at next week. As far as targeting it for DFS, you know, Washington State has some cheap pieces here. They really do. And remember, this is the Hawaii system. You know, this is the Hawaii system. They have four wide receivers. This is their coach, Nick Rolovich. He comes from Hawaii. Four wide receivers literally every play. Two guys stay in the inside. Two guys stay in the outside. They don't rotate. Those inside guys play in the inside the entire game. Outside guys play in the outside the entire game. Jaden Delora, you know, Rolovich always likes to have kind of a running quarterback. So you can put Delora in the same, you know, breath that we had Cordero from Hawaii when he was in the system. Like, he has upside. He has upside. I like the inside wide receivers in this offense, Harris and Jackson. We got big injury news on the USC side. Drake London, he's by far the best receiver. He tweaked his back last week. We don't know if he's going. Helton said he thought it wasn't going to keep him out, but Helton's no longer there to report anything. So who knows? If he's out, there's some other guys, Washington Bryant, that become pretty interesting. Then you have Keaton Slovis. I don't know. Maybe they come out and run it more. It's just really hard to see. Slovis just never feels like he has a ton of upside because he's just not the running quarterback. And he literally needs to throw for like 500 yards to hit value. All right, next segment. This is a fun one. I'm really liking this one. Anatomy of an upset. Let's review an upset is what we're going to do. We're going to review an upset each week to understand what went wrong and why a better team lost to a worse team. And I think these are incredibly fascinating. Let's play our theme music.
Appalachian State has stunned the college football world. One of the greatest upsets in sports.
All right. For me, this was the wackiest box score of the week. Ohio-Duquesne. You might be saying, no, who the hell cares about Ohio-Duquesne? Well, what happened in this game could happen to your favorite team. And I'm going to tell you why Duquesne won. Ohio generated 6.7 yards per play. Duquesne had 4.6. Ohio didn't turn it over. Ohio runs back a kick for a touchdown and still loses. That is incredible. I mean, the percentage of winning when you don't turn it over, you run back a kick and you win the yards per play by 2 yards has got to be astronomical. So how did they lose? They had tremendously bad third down defense, tremendously bad third down offense too. They had tons of penalties. And what Duquesne did here is they shortened the game via long possessions and won. If I was a head coach, if I'm playing a team I'm more talented than, I'm running hurry up the entire time on offense until I get the lead and then I slow it down. If I run it into a team I'm not as talented against, the other team has the more talent, I am running the slowest game I can think of because less possessions, more variance. More possessions, less variance. It's that simple. Duquesne was able to slow the game down, win on third down, play smart via penalties, and despite Ohio not turning it over, running a kickback, kicking their ass in yards per play, Duquesne comes out with a win. That is a crazy box score, and I love talking about that stuff in college football. All right, here. Nebraska at Oklahoma. Oklahoma minus 22.5. This almost feels like a bloodbath scenario where you wake up a sleeping bear. Oklahoma kind of cakewalked through the first two games. Like, we know we're good. We know we're good enough to win. We'll turn on when we need to. And then you have Nebraska. You have a big rivalry. You know, they're starting to get some eyes on Oklahoma. It kind of feels like a game where you wake up the bear a little bit in Oklahoma. With Oklahoma, of course, we can always play the quarterback. He's an absolute stud. That's Spencer Rattler. Also, another guy, you know, chasing the Heisman podium. He's going to get opportunities for touchdowns even late in the game. And in a rivalry game, you rarely see guys come out at the end. You're looking to really put a number up against your rivalry who – usually sometimes these guys are competing against for recruits. I don't think Oklahoma or Nebraska loves when either program snags a recruit from Oklahoma or Nebraska, the other state, into their program. I mean, that's just, there are not a ton of players there to begin with, but I mean, as compared to Florida, Texas, and California, but you know, that is a recruiting war zone. And for the program like Oklahoma to beat someone like Nebraska, that would just shut up any recruit that said, hey, I want to go to Nebraska over Oklahoma. And for Nebraska, looking for a program-changing win, this would mean everything for him. So it should be – we'll see what happens, but Oklahoma's a better team, and Nebraska makes a lot of mistakes usually. Running back-wise for Oklahoma, it's always split. That's EMO. Oklahoma, Kenny Brooks, Eric Gray, both are good. Both could go up, really hard to predict. Wide receiver, I like Marvin Mims. I think he's a stud. I think he's the best wide receiver in the team. He's going to go 180 and two at some point. It's going to happen. Is it this one? I don't know. And then the other side, you have Adrian Martinez. They're going to get some garbage time. Even if they're down 28 in the fourth quarter, Adrian Martinez is going to be in this game. They want to make the scoreboard. If they're losing, not look as good, look better than what the game could be. He's going to be in the game the whole time. He could rack up all kinds of garbage time, especially rushing. Sure. Receiver, Samori Toure. He's interesting because the rest of the pass catchers for Nebraska are all hurt. That's also going to hurt him. My lean would be Oklahoma minus 22.5. However, it's a rivalry game, so sometimes you throw out the numbers and you kind of just watch back and enjoy it for the game, and that's what I'm going to do here today. All right, Georgia Tech, Clemson. Clemson's a 28-point favorite. This reminds me of a story a couple of years ago when Georgia Tech and in their whole program, they weightlift before the game. It sounds asinine. Honestly, I think it is asinine. And Dabo got all pissed about this. And Dabo just absolutely ramped the score. He didn't admit he ramped the score. He absolutely ramped the score to like 77-6. And he might have pulled some of his players, but they continued to run their best plays on offense, running or passing. They didn't just run vanilla stuff. And they won literally by 70 points. And that was kind of a, hey, we're Dabo Swinney. We're going to put Georgia Tech in their place, and we won't ever compete against Georgia Tech for recruits again. And I think you might get a little bit in this game too. There might be still some animosity from those teams. So I'm going to take Clemson minus 28. I know everyone's kind of been down on Clemson. Georgia Tech kind of stinks. They lost to an FCS school to start the year. I think they got some problems here. DFS, obviously no interest in Georgia Tech. No freaking way. Clemson, DJ is, he's a little more athletic than I thought he was. He has two rushing TDs on the year. So, yeah, absolutely. Let's play DJ. Might only get a half, but let's play him. Top wide receivers are Joseph Nada and Justin Ross. It's interesting. Ross is playing the slot a lot this year. You know, when we think of Justin Ross, we're thinking outside, making wide receiver plays in the national championship. And now he's in the inside every play. So that's kind of weird there. Clemson has a big-time running back issue. For whatever reason, they don't have much talent at running back. And when you don't have much talent at running back across your roster, you just rotate in four or five guys to see if one of those guys, shows a flash or something in a game that they might not have shown in practice. And that's what Clemson's doing. They just really don't have a running back. Their offensive line's just okay too. But this is Georgia Tech. They're a lot better than Georgia Tech. I'm taking Clemson minus 28 in this one. All right, let's get into our last award here. That's the coach of the week.
No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
Coach of the week. I'm giving the award to Sam Pittman of Arkansas. Get this, 2008, 2019. Arkansas as a program was dead. They were the laughingstock of the SEC. Vanderbilt was thought higher of in the eight in the SEC than Arkansas. Arkansas had zero SEC wins in 2018, 2019. Pittman takes over before last year. They get three SEC wins in a shortened season and some close calls. Now they just beat the pants off Texas. I mean, they waxed them, absolutely waxed them. 7.1 to 4.0 yards per play edge, just waxed them. Now, listen, they have the hardest schedule in the country, so tough sledding moving forward. But for Sam Pittman to take the program that won zero SEC games in 2018 to 2019 to 2021, where you wax a blue blood program like Texas, I mean, hats off to Sam Pittman, what he's doing. Sam, you are our coach of the week. And speaking of blue blood programs, let's get into our last two games. Alabama, Florida, Tulsa, Ohio State. definitely blue bloods here. Alabama at Florida, Bama minus 14.5. You know, the game last year, I'm thinking to myself, well, Alabama's just going to wax them. You know, they wax them all the time. And then go figure Florida puts up, you know, I believe almost 50 points, and it turns into a phenomenal, phenomenal game. Maybe that happens again. I mean, I tell you this, Dan Mullen, he is a top five offensive coordinator in college football. There's no doubt about it. And he's kind of reinvented his offense this year to feature his two quarterbacks that run the ball a ton. Dan Mullen is really freaking good. And yes, Alabama's talented on defense, but again, Dan Mullen is really freaking good. So I'm giving Florida a chance to score some points here. Will they win? No, I don't think so. Sure, they have a chance, but I don't think so. I would actually be interested in playing these Florida quarterbacks, either Emory Jones or Anthony Richardson, but the problem is they're going to rotate. If Florida's going to do anything, Jacob Copeland's a wide receiver. He's one guy who has some decent talent, and he's a guy who would play if you're stacking this game. And then you have Alabama, Bryce Young. And it's interesting because I almost feel like Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud of Ohio State quarterback, they're almost a similar type of guy. They don't love to run it a lot. They're looking to throw it. And they're pretty darn accurate quarterbacks. They're young. They got a lot to learn, but you definitely see some upside in the accuracy and some of the stuff they do with their arm. So not a ton of rushing yardage for Bryce. But if Florida keeps it close, next thing you know, Bryce has 6 touchdowns, which is doable for Alabama. They could score 49 points in a flash. I think we have to be a little interested. Wide receiver rotation, we talked about it. Alabama likes to, you know, generally keep, you know, 3 to 4 guys in there. Jameson Lynch, Williams, John Mechie, they're the clear top 2 targets. They're going to take the outside. The inside, this is interesting. You have Slade Bolden splitting time with freshman JoJo Earl, and Earl's a pretty damn good player. He is electric. I think over the season, as the season goes on, he's going to take more of that role from Bolden. We'll see, but any of those 3 guys are playable. And with Alabama, it's almost better if they play a better team because they're always going to score 50, but their skilled players aren't always going to be in the game in the fourth quarter because their defense is so good. They could be up a ton just running the ball. Brian Robinson, lead dog at running back. They're going to rotate a little bit, but he's going to get his. He usually does, so interested in him. As far as the lean on the game, 14.5, that's a pretty good line, and I talked about it. I mean, Florida surprised me last year. Dan Mullen, kudos, man. So I'm not going to bet against Dan Mullen. That's a lot of points there, 14.5. Last game, Tulsa at Ohio State. Ohio State is a 24.5 point favorite. Now, Ryan Day comes out and says, listen, we talked about it for 48 hours. There's going to be some defensive changes. I don't know what that means. We don't know what that means, but we can hope that they're going to get a little bit better on defense. But it's really hard to fix a defense that was that poorly aligned, moved very little behind, moved very little prior to the snap count, played very vanilla defense at that, couldn't really generate pressure. It's hard to change that in 1 week. You know, that's off season. That's new defensive coordinator stuff. So we'll see. Unfortunately, or fortunately for us, Tulsa's a really tough team to kind of pick from DFS. They're almost like West Virginia. They have 4 wide receivers. They spread it around. Running backs, they rotate. So I'm really not interested in Tulsa. They could score 24 points here and not have one guy hit value. They rotate around that much. Ohio State, the thing about Ohio State and why one of those wide receivers breaks a slate every week is because they never rotate. You know, you have 3 guys at wide receivers who literally get like 80% of the target share. Now that Jackson Smith and Enigma is taking care of the slot work. And if the quarterback throws for 300 yards, it's 240 yards of split up against those 3 wide receivers. One of those guys is going to over 100 yards, likely catching 1 to 2 touchdowns. So if you are including Ohio State wide receiver in your lineup every week, you're probably not doing it right. Now, it's really hard to predict which one's going to do well because they'll move them around the formation a little bit. And no matter what cornerback you throw out, when you have 3 first-round wide receivers, any of them can win on any given play against almost all college cornerbacks. And you have a pretty good quarterback with good accuracy to do that. So pick your poison, almost play roulette, pick a card. One of them is going to do well. Do I know who it is? I don't have a freaking clue in the world. I usually pick long with Ohio State, so hopefully you have better luck at Ohio State than I do. Running back wise, we did see this. They shortened the rotation. Master Teague was completely out of the rotation, and how he rushed against Minnesota, he deserved to be out. Might be a great guy, but the other guys, Travion Henderson, Mayan Williams, they're just better. And they split a true 50-50 workload. It'll be interesting as the season goes on to see if one of those guys kind of takes the reins or if there's a 50-50 workload. I think that both of them played well enough that they deserve kind of a 50-50 workload right now, and I think they'll keep that for a little bit. All right, let's review some bets and picks. Last year, 28-18 for myself. Doc was 28-15. I'm off to a 4-2 start, 2-2 last week. Doc is 8-1, 2-1 on the year. Doc has 11 picks. I don't know if I can go through all those. Again, you might have to hit the rewind button for that one. I have a couple picks here. I have Coastal minus 14. I have Wake Forest minus 4.5, taking some favorites here. And then I have Clemson minus 28. And hopefully Georgia Tech can lift some weights before, you know, before the game starts. That would be fantastic for my prospects. So just those three there. All right. Let's round it out with the old Rudy music, the old words of wisdom here. And guys, when it comes to DFS, it sounds simple, but you want to play players from good teams. When you start going astray and playing guys from bad teams don't score a lot, and good teams generally score a lot, and that's where your upside comes from. And again, it sounds so simple, but you have teams like Ohio State, you have teams like Alabama, they're going to score points. They're going to score 40 to 50 points. Ohio State only scored 28 last week, but they had a ton of yardage, multiple guys had value. They're going to put up points, they're going to put up yardage. Other teams in the slate, you know, your Wake Forest of the world, you're trying to think of other teams that fit this example, like your Notre Dame, your USC, they can put up 40 points on any given week. Absolutely. But there's going to be a lot of weeks where they don't, because they are not at the elite level that Alabama and Ohio State are. They're just not at that elite level. So keep it simple, play the players from the best team. It's that easy, right? I just got to pick who that is now. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in this week. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You hear it everywhere. Feedback is great. Got some good feedback last week. I really appreciate it. And actually, now that I got that feedback, I was asked to do the 18K salary game, which I picked three guys on certain salaries, and the salary must add up to 18K. So I need a quarterback, a running back, and a wide receiver. So I'm going to start at running back. I'm going to take the savings with Travion Henderson, who's 5.2K. I'm interested in Travion Henderson this week. Absolutely. Quarterback. And I'm doing this literally off the cuff here, so you're going to have to bear with me here. Let me do this. You know, I'm going to take wide receiver. I'm going to take Ty Freifogel, who complete GPP play. So 5.9. So 5.9 plus, I think it's 5.2. That's 11.2. That leaves me 6.8 to play with. Man, that's tough this week. Savings are really hard this week, by the way, guys. We need to find, like, new Saturday, find any 3K guys we play. I might take a zero at 3.0K. News is brutal. This is going to be a totally GPP line. I'm going to go with the Florida quarterback, Emory Jones, at 6.5K to make it fit. That's especially viable if Anthony Richardson, who has a hamstring injury, doesn't play. So Emory Jones, a quarterback. You have Travion Henderson, running back, Ohio State. And wide receiver is Ty Freifogel, Indiana. This is your all-tournament team, all under 3% owned guys. So had to get that in. That was good feedback from my main man, Brent, who happened to take down the night slate last week. So shout out to Brent on that and his great call on Blake Corum, who absolutely dominated Michigan running back. A guy I really like for the next level. All right, guys. Remember, guys, these are just initial thoughts. My complete breakdowns are at GupsCorner.com. That's for Friday slate showdown, which was tonight. Saturday night slate, and of course the main slate. But until next time, make some memories.